The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The voice of the people. News Talk 710, KNUS, Denver. One of us is wrong here. The other is Peter Boyles on News Talk 710, KNUS.
Happy Halloween, everyone. It's Friday, October the 30th, 2020. Good old 710, KNUS. We are the voice of the people. What a week it's been. 710, KNUS Weather Center weather on a Friday, 65 degrees. Get the motorcycles out today. 56 tomorrow. Breezy for Halloween, and then 63 Sunday, back to work Monday, 70 degrees, standing by for Julie Hayden. Dave Gruber's going to be on the show. Dr. Tom Noel, tomorrow is Halloween, next Tuesday is Election Day. And what a week it's been. It's been really a rough and tumble week, and it's been good stuff. It's good talk radio. I had a great lunch yesterday with Randy Corcoran and Tom Martino. There's a pair to draw to. Good lunch. We spoke about talk radio. Talked about the dynamics of what the world is about. And then a long phone conversation with former Denver Post publisher Dean Singleton talking about the state of Colorado and the GOP. And he said, with the exception of one trip to Colorado Springs, we've talked about this, Donald Trump has never come back to Colorado. And there's a reason he doesn't come back. It's all the Never Trumpers and the rest of the GOP. He does not come here. And I thought, what icing on a cake for a week of arguing. In the meantime, this was a bombshell yesterday. I'm at lunch, and my phone blows up, and Julie Hayden, one half of Chuck and Julie, my dear friend, joins us about the Denver judge yesterday doubting the Channel 9 defense of the security guard. Julie, good morning, man. Thanks for doing it, and welcome back.
Hey, thank you, Peter. Thank you for having me. Good morning to you guys, too.
I take it from the top. What happened yesterday, and why does this really slap Channel 9 in the face?
Well, essentially, the judge in the Matthew Doloff case basically said he doesn't see any evidence of self-defense. I mean, he flat out said that. What happened was last week, at the end of last week, there was a bond reduction hearing. The judge had initially, a different judge, had initially set the bond at $500,000. And among a bunch of other motions, the public defender argued that she thought that the bond should be reduced to $25,000 to $50,000. Kind of interestingly, even the prosecutor said, well, he didn't really argue to keep the high bond. He just said, you know, hey, look, Doloff brought a gun into downtown and killed somebody. And he said that the victim was, you know, had what he called hairspray, the equivalent of hairspray. So I'm not even, it was a mace, but it was apparently a very insignificant kind of mace. But yesterday, the judge issued a ruling denying any kind of bond request. And he said, and this is what he said, I'm going to read it directly. He says, the evidence of which the court is presently aware, appears to show that at the time of the shooting, there was no danger from the victim that placed the defendant or anyone else in imminent risk of death or great bodily injury. So the judge is basically saying, you know, the defense is arguing, hey, he clearly acted in self-defense. Channel 9 has been throwing interviews up showing that Matthew Doloff is the hero, that Lee Keltner was about to kill everybody, which is clearly a lie. And the judge flat out said yesterday that I don't see it. For what we know now, there is no evidence that indicates this was a case of self-defense.
Now, I watched our favorite newscaster last night to see how he would react, and he was very sheepish about reading this story. Julie Hayden and Peter Boyles, I believe, and you and I have talked about this, that Channel 9, using Stanley Garnett and Mitch the Ditch Morrissey, politically active Democrats, they've been using them as sock puppets to give Channel 9 some weird, strange Matthew Doloff self-defense. And boy, yesterday that came apart, didn't it?
Oh, it absolutely did. And you know, and shame on any of the other people who interviewed Jeremiah Elliott. I mean, the Antifa thug agitator who started the whole thing and who I believe was acting along with Channel 9. He refused to answer that question, refused to answer whether he even knew Matthew Doloff. And, yeah, I mean, they clearly have been lying to the public and then privately acknowledging that, no, it wasn't self-defense. Remember, their producer, at the time, they released the video that shows the producer screaming to the police, "He saved my life, he saved my life." But then the producer's attorney, Dan Recht, comes out after the producer does, apparently, Zach Newman does hours-long interview with the police. And when the channel, you know, like you pointed out, the people that Channel 9 flew in from another Channel 9 old station to do this story to give the appearance of some sort of objectivity, when they said, well, did he fear for his life? What Dan Rex said very carefully was he feared for his safety. To me, that clearly says the producer was saying to the police, no, I did not fear for my life.
Yeah. I mean, again,
no,
when Channel 9.
He didn't save anybody's life.
They brought in those reporters from WFAA, their sister station, as we said in our new piece, meaning the same dudes that pay Kyle Clark are paying the other reporters, and this is supposed to clean it up, who came up with Stanley Garnett. I mean, all this stuff was so laughable,
right,
but they attempted to put it over.
Right. Oh, it was an orchestrated lie to the public to make them look good and make the victim look bad. And, you know, fortunately, this Denver judge, Madden, basically in his ruling, I mean, to be honest, Peter, I wouldn't have been surprised if he had lowered the bond at least somewhat. That happens a lot of times. But here he goes on to say, you know, no. And again, the evidence that the court is aware of shows that there was no danger from the victim that put anybody in fear for their life or even great bodily injury. And goes on to talk about, that he wasn't going to reduce the bond because the guy could be considered a flight risk. He said if he goes, the defense had argued, well, he needs to be supporting his family. And the judge said, well, he would go back to being a security guard, and we clearly can't let that happen. And then says, you know, one of the other things to take into account is the likelihood of conviction. So I think the judge flat out said, he doesn't see any evidence of self-defense, which again raises the question, what did the 9 News crew do to draw Lee Keltner's attention away from the argument with Jeremiah Elliott onto them? We have the Denver Post reporter who was there taking the pictures. In her initial social media statements, she said that the man behind me, who was Doloff, started arguing with the Patriot. Not the Patriot started arguing with Doloff. So, shame on Channel 9. This shows that I think they, not only were they lying, but they knew that they were lying to the public.
Sure.
Essentially blaming the victim in this case to try to prop up their own PR.
Well, they're caught. Julie Hayden, Peter Boyle, 710 KNUS. We all know the story, that tragic day, and there's a man who is Patriot is there. He's there in the muster that was put together by Teague Teagan. And as they're filing out, it's over. I mean, I had lunch yesterday with Randy, and we were going over this with Martino there at the table, too, as well. And we were going over, and I said, Randy, where were you? I've never asked Randy physically where he was when this happened. He said he was four blocks away. And he said he didn't even know. I said, did you hear the shot? And he went, no. They were gone. He said, we were done. It was over. We were leaving. And this is my personal belief that the Denver Post and Channel 9 were shadowing Jeremiah Elliott to get what we call the money shot. And he's a provocateur. And nine, the question I brought up, and I said it to the guys yesterday at lunch, and I say it to you, I've said it publicly. If Channel 9 was not there, would Lee Keltner have gone home alive?
You know, I absolutely believe yes.
I do too.
Channel 9 was clearly hanging around, videotaping. First, they've been videotaping Jeremiah Elliott, the provocateur, all day anyway. He was, keep in mind, the only Antifa person who was standing at the entrance to the Patriot entrance. He wasn't part of their protest. He was there solely to try to stir things up. He wasn't expressing any kind of anti-Trump or anti-police. He was solely standing there insulting people, threatening to rape women.
That's right.
Solely trying to get a reaction. They didn't get it during the rally. According to Tick Teagan, they huddled, is Tick Teagan's word.
His words.
They huddled, the 9 News crew did.
He said he saw them.
The provocateur.
Yeah,
and then followed him when he confronted people who were trying to leave.
Yeah, Teague said he saw them huddle. And he says there's
right.
Now, here's one of the questions I had, too. I almost called you last night, but Julie Hayden, Peter Boyle, 710 KNUS. This judge who makes this, I think, extremely great decision, maybe I should ask this of Chuck and Randy as well, but does he see things that haven't been, or has he been shown things, maybe that's a better way to say it, like Halo footage or drone footage or, I don't know, has he seen some video that has not been shown to the public yet but is in the hands of the prosecutors?
You know, as far as I know, probably not. Usually that's the kind of stuff that comes out during a preliminary hearing. And usually, and I could be mistaken on this, but I think usually not. On the other hand, how much this influence, I'm sure he's seen all the same stuff we've seen. But I don't think there have been any, I guess what I would call in-camera hearings. I mean, he's certainly seen, I would imagine, the police reports. He's seen, I take that back a little bit. He will have seen, they always do assessments of people, what kind of flight risk are and things like that. He will have seen those reports, and I don't know what would be in that kind of stuff usually isn't made public, and I don't know what would have been included in that.
Has he been told something, or has he seen something that, because in essence, he's not saying self-defense, or he's questioning the self-defense. Is that a fair way to say it?
Yeah, well, he's not even questioning it. He says, I don't see it.
That's what I'm saying.
Stronger.
That's why I ask, has he seen something?
I don't know what all is included in the sort of the bond assessment information. I would say this, that I find it a little bit odd. I mean, that's a pretty strong statement. A lot of times judges just rule on bond reduction. Well, you know, they just say no. They'll just say, you know, this fits into, you know, there are sort of regulations and guidelines as to what a person's bond should be. And in Denver, in particular, the judges frequently let the people go out on person over cognizance bond. And, you know, so if anything, I think the judge's tendency would have been, you know, all things being equal, to lower the bond. But the fact that he didn't, Peter, and the fact that he said publicly, I don't see any evidence of self-defense with what I see here. I don't think he would say that if he didn't feel pretty confident that he had, you know. So, but again, that's a good question, and I'm not sure what all would be included in the stuff that he has seen.
I had a friend call me last night about this and said, somebody knows something, and I let that go.
But,
so we got there, and the two interviews, by the way, the one on Channel 9, How Are You, which, God, was that despicable.
Oh.
And then Channel 4, but we talked about this when he speaks about our, meaning the possessive. We talked about this, wrote it in the column. Hours when he's is he talking about Channel 9? Who's the hour?
Right. Well, he says our. Didn't he say our station?
Our station.
Jeremiah Elliott refers to Channel 9 as our station.
That's right.
You know, and again, then interestingly, when they're asking him questions, and they don't pressure him on this, but they say, you know, the fake 9 news reporter asked him, you know, what kind of contact did you had? And he says, here's a guy who's calling the police racist, wants to defund them, is attacking the police station, and says, well, I can't talk about that because I don't want to interfere with the investigation. you care.
Right.
And then when Channel 4 asks him, did you know Doloff? Once again, he says, I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, sure. And
so those are the only two questions he didn't answer. So I think the obvious question is yes.
Of course. Julie and Peter, and we're talking about yesterday with the Denver district judge, refused to reduce the $500,000 bail for this, quote, security guard who wasn't a security guard, who shot and killed this demonstrator in Denver. And it comes down to a couple of questions. Was Elliott, the provocateur, working in any capacity with Channel 9? Julie, what do you think?
I think so, obviously.
Yeah.
Now, I want to use the term loosely. And initially, what they're doing, I believe, isn't anything that doesn't happen all the time in the media, where, you know, you're down covering something. Maybe they want to get an angle on the Antifa people. And they use, I believe, Matthew Dolloff, who I believe, based on Jeremiah's refusal to answer the question, they probably at least knew who each other was or had, you know, some kind of connection. And I think that, that Dolloff, part of his role there was to sort of make introductions, to make a connection between Nine and Jeremiah Elliott. And I think they were there specifically shadowing him, I guess, is the good word. I don't think anybody clearly intended anyone to get shot. But I think your question of would Lee Keltner be alive if they hadn't been shadowing him is the answer to that is yes, he would. That if Channel 9 had not been acting and shadowing, and to some extent, I mean, Jeremiah Elliott wants to get the money shot for him. That's his job, so to speak.
And the MacGuffin is Zach Newman, and Zach Newman is yet to come forward. We don't see any Nine News hard-hitting interviews with their own boy, Zach Newman. Channel 4 isn't pressing to get an interview with Zach Newman. Zach Newman's got his own lawyer now, which I doubt some part-time producer can afford to pay for.
Exactly.
I mean, the questions are legion. Channel 9 has, like, done that, wiped their brow, whew, like they think it's over. And then this happens yesterday, and I tell you, I watched Kyle Clark, Sport Code Boy, and he didn't want to do this story, because the way they presented it was, well, it's a nothing burger, but it's amazingly significant. But isn't it interesting they're not using one of their reporters, one from their sister station, because they think they're in the clear now, or they believe something. And now Kyle Clark has to actually do the story.
Well, and what's so disgusting about their behavior is the fact that they lied to people trying to spin it to make them look like the victims in this, to make them look like, to try to give the impression that somehow the victim in this case, Lee Keltner, trying to drag his name through the mud, trying to make it seem as if somehow he was threatening their lives, when they clearly knew that wasn't true at all. I could see if Channel 9 had done something along the lines of just simply said some very brief, short reporting, just reporting exactly what happens, right? He was held over for bond. The bond was set. But no, they take it further, and they lie to the public. They turn this all into a PR campaign to try to make themselves look good.
And by using...
Unfortunately,
Stanley. No one calls him Stanley. Stanley Garnett, who we know was what he did or attempted to do to Brett Kavanaugh using Deborah Ramirez, and he's a Brownstein operative. Then they come back with Mitch the Ditch Morrissey, and they're both presenting this possibility of self-defense. They're not. No, exactly. They didn't bring anybody out there and said, you know, the chances are real good that this guy maybe just shot him. They had to come in and start to present. And it's a Kyle Clark defense is really what we can start to call this.
Right. Well, I know. And I saw some other stories I thought that were done fairly straightforward where on other stations where the attorneys they interviewed say, they explain, you know, it depends. Self-defense is not, you know, number one, if you're the one that starts the argument, if you're the one that is the initial aggressor, it's kind of hard to claim self-defense in many cases. And they also say you have to show that there was, you know, that somebody clearly felt that their life, they were in safe, or they're in danger of losing their life. And so at least they presented it fair. But here, you know, I mean, like you said, they're interviewing the provocateur. They're flat out saying, oh, yeah, you know, they release the videotape of the producer lying initially, saying he maced him, so he had to shoot him, and then shouting, he saved my life. Oh. Although there's many missing minutes in there, so you got to wonder, where are the missing minutes?
What did we say? You pick a bar fight and then shoot the guy, and you claim self-defense.
Exactly. Particularly when the guy isn't armed and isn't... I mean, the pictures clearly show, you know, we've all seen it, where... Matthew Dolloff's hand, he's reaching. The reason that Lee Keltner slaps his hand away is he's trying to reach for Lee Keltner's gun.
Yeah.
But then Matthew Dolloff puts he's clearly got his hand on his gun, and Lee Keltner's hand holding the mace, or what the prosecutor described as, you know, the equivalent of hairspray, down at his side. He's not pointing it at them.
Yeah. We have that picture. We have that picture.
Mm-hmm. Which the Denver Post, by the way, didn't put out for a few days.
No, they did not. No, they did not, did they? And then that one really significant picture, and you can see Sarah Hutchinson right behind Jeremiah Kelly. He's leaning on the fence. But my favorite one was at Channel 4 when they asked him about him wearing this Black Guns Matter shirt. I had that hanging in my closet.
Yeah. And here's the thing that bothered me about that even more, is they also know he's lying. They all took pictures of him standing there harassing people. And they let him get away with saying, oh, I just happened to be downtown.
Just was there.
And these guys approached me, and these guys started the argument with mm-hmm. me. They all knew that was not true.
So here we are again, Julie Hayden, Peter Boyles. And yesterday, and this is a significant development, you would not know it by watching Channel 9 last night, but the Denver judge, he is in essence throwing the BS flag at the self-defense claim when Matthew Dolloff shoots Lee Keltner. And Channel 9 had spent all of its time, and it's a ruse, bringing in these, quote, out-of-town sister station reporters, because they're saying to you, you can't really trust us, but you can trust these guys. And, of course, they think it's all cleaned up. No one's ever seen Zach Newman speak about anything. And now Dolloff, he's refused the bail reduction. And what in essence is the judge saying one more time? Julie, what does the judge say?
So the judge flat out says that in the bond reduction hearing, the defense attorney argued that they should reduce the bond significantly, saying it was clear that he was and did act in self-defense. But the judge says, no, I don't see that at all. This is a direct quote. The evidence of which the court is presently aware appears to show that at the time of the shooting, there was no danger from the victim that placed the defendant or anyone else in imminent risk of death or great bodily injury. So basically he's saying, I don't see self-defense, and I think there's a significant likelihood of conviction.
Yeah.
You know, which again, you know, Channel 9's been trying to convince us all that Lee Keltner was a bad guy, and they're just the victims.
Oh, yeah.
And the judge said, no.
Not so quick. And
not so quick.
Not so fast.
Not with the evidence so far. And I don't know what other evidence. I mean, you know, I don't know what other evidence. I think any new evidence to come in is only going to make it worse for Channel 9 and Dolloff. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Sidebar question. Are you guys, is Rev going to trick and treat? And you guys going to buy candy for the neighborhood?
You know, yeah, yes. I think nobody's sure what that's going to look like, but Chuck and Rev, every year, the way we do it at our house, they go out and trick-or-treat. I stay home mm-hmm. and hand out candy.
Right.
So I bought candy, and I was thinking I'd just kind of put it outside in a bowl and turn the lights on, and Chuck and Rev are going to go around and hit the the school canceled their Halloween thing. So, yeah, and give it a shot and just see what's out there.
And we're talking about it this morning. It's like, no one knows quite what to do.
Yeah. Maybe we could have after Election Day, maybe on Wednesday, we can have a whole new trick-or-treat day.
Yeah, Trump wins.
I have a feeling that miraculously everything's going to be cured on Wednesday.
Yeah, Trump wins, and then we get to go trick-and-treat. Thank you, Julie. You make this happen, and I'm going to see Chuck this afternoon, but thank you so much for doing this.
All right.
Julie Hayden, everyone. Thank you. 303-696-1971. And now 9 is now caught. And if you followed this story, you know the game that 9 has done by presenting people like Stanley Garnett and Mitch Morrissey. These are operatives giving these plausible self-defense. They're defending Matthew Dolloff. And now they got a bigger problem. And did all of their sister station people simply go home? There's no announcements over that. And I watched Kyle Clark. He was sheepish last night because this story broke. I talked to Julie yesterday afternoon, and I intentionally watched. Extremely sheepish. They'll come up with some other way to try and lie themselves out of it. They have big problems. 65 will be the high today. Congratulations, Urban Lights. They're 40 years, man. That's big. 40th year in the lighting business. These guys are truly the best. Celebrate with them at their anniversary sale going on Saturday and Sunday, tomorrow and the next day. 40% off. All lighting, up to 70% off clearance items. Incredible deals this weekend. 20,000 square feet. Gorgeous lighting. I mean, it's a showroom. It's an art gallery. Park and walk in. Take advantage of the experts who will help you plan the perfect designs for your home. Unique shopping experience like getting complimentary design services. As always, the lowest price is guaranteed on brand name ceiling fans. That's the answer. Mika Air, Kichler, unbelievable deals, fall savings event. Check them online, urbanlightsdenver.com. Unbelievable. I mean, this is it. Unbeatable and unbelievable price guarantees. Take it from me. They're the best. You can find them south of I-25 on Santa Fe between Florida and Mississippi. Look at them online. Denver, it's urbanlightsdenver.com. Local experts bringing genuine value to any space their urban lights.
Now, back to the Peter Boyle Show.
Morning, everybody. Friday morning. Just an old chunk of coal. This is a Billy Joe song. But I'm going to be a diamond someday. Love this song, man. Friday morning. I'm going to grow and glow. October the 30th, 2020 was announced yesterday. Billy Joe Shaver passed away. I was just a fan, man. And earlier in the week, it was Jerry Jeff, and now it's Billy Joe. And Billy Joe did all of those tunes, man, all those rebel, you know, they talk about them, Southern white trash, outlaw music, whatever people want to call it. But he wrote that one, too. I'm just an old lump of coal. I'm going to be a diamond someday. 710 KNUS. We're Denver's talk station. Good morning, everyone. The day before Halloween, and I had a lot of conversations with people away from the radio station yesterday about how the station went all week, and talking about the GOP in Colorado and the anger that came up on the radio station. You know, it's interesting. Donald Trump doesn't come to Colorado. Ask yourself why. 710 KNUS. We start with Dave on line one. Dave, you're on a radio show. Good morning.
All right, morning, Peter. Hey, Kinky Friedman's all right, right?
Kinky Friedman and the Texas, you know what? Yeah, they're. Remember when Kinky ran for president?
Yeah. I'm out here in California where Wavy Gravy ran also. Nobody for president.
Wavy Gravy. Wavy Gravy was, they were all part of the Diggers, weren't they?
Yeah, I guess
yeah.
He was.
Yeah, they were.
He
goes
way back. He was a stand-up comedian in the 50s or something.
Yeah, Wavy. Yeah. Wow, good memory.
Well, you know, you gotta meet the folks. You know what I was interested in? I heard you interviewing the woman earlier in the show about the death out there, and I was, what did they ever resolve about Pinkerton? Because didn't they hire him, but they're not taking responsibility for him?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I wrote a column that has not dropped yet, but I said that the groups that I see that have the biggest problems away from Matthew Dolloff is Channel 9 and the Pinkertons, because the Pinkertons sublet or they subcontract, and that they didn't background this guy. Remember, the guy does not have a license to be a security guard,
right? And it's like they hire a hitman, and that goes all the way back. I don't know if you ever heard of the Palmer raids.
Well, yeah, sure, of course, they raided
troops.
Yeah, Palmer. That led that was he was J. Edgar Hoover's boss.
Palmer was the attorney general under Woodrow Wilson.
The communist
raid.
And
the troops couldn't come home. You remember the World War One ended, and they kept the troops over in Europe longer just so they could screw the election. And they used the Pinkertons to create some bombings.
Well, the Pinkertons
which
were terrible.
Kicked off the Palmer raids, sure. Which meant that they could kick commies and socialists out of
remember,
the country.
That was the Red
and
Arc.
And declared the IWW a criminal operation.
Mm-hmm,
and
sure.
What was that old Warren Beatty movie, Reds? Goes on into a whole thing. Palmer was evil.
Go slow. The Palmer raids, this great fear comes into this country, and there are people, Emma Goldman and numbers of those, the radicals.
Patriots.
Mother Jones is alive then. And Emma Goldman, but there was something called the Red Ark, and they deported all of these communists, quote unquote, that Palmer.
Well, they rounded up school teachers
and
professors.
Everybody.
Anybody that said that Ludlow Massacre was the reaction,
or spoke against,
wasn't Ludlow just 10 years earlier or something?
Or spoke against going into the First World War.
Right. Yeah. Well, it was all sorts of injustice because it was the industrial age, right? And those big guys came up with their assembly lines, polluted the river big time,
didn't want to pay taxes but wanted to have the right to poison the river and treat everybody like chattel slaves.
Well,
and, you know, here's Pinkertons in the middle of it.
Always have been.
And Pinkertons were provocateurs that provided the bombs.
The Pinkertons are interesting because Pinkerton himself was a pretty brave guy. You know, he was Lincoln's guy.
Civil War, right?
Yeah. He
50
was,
years
he,
earlier.
Indeed. But by the time they called them the Pinks, by the time they turn into what they turn into, you're absolutely right. They were goons. And the steel mill that I worked in when I was a kid, the guards, the security was were Pinkertons. And the old-timers, the guys that made the union, they despised them. I mean, they liked the guys that were the just had the jobs, you know, but they the Pinkertons, and my grandma hated the Pinkertons. And the Pinkertons were, they played the role of sort of brown shirts.
Right.
And Palmer and Coolidge, excuse me, and then Woodrow Wilson, his attorney general's name is Palmer. Palmer's right-hand man is this young up-and-coming kid, J. Edgar Hoover.
Right.
And they began to round people up. And they got rid of them. If they deported them, that was called the Red Ark, A-R-K. And they put them on the ships, and they got them out of the country.
And it had to have been more than one boat.
Well, the big one was Emma Goldman, and I forget the other people that were put on that ark. But
yeah, Reed was the guy. Well, Warren Beatty played Reed. He was a journalist.
Yeah, well, Reed's an interesting character. But they were beyond being journalists. I mean, they were advocates. But
well, I mean, any citizen that realizes that the super rich don't pay taxes,
but they're
the ones that have the decals on the congressman.
Well, but
so they don't pay taxes and they get the representation.
Well, but again,
it's representation without taxation.
But look at the people that run the Democratic Party. Look, there was a time in this country that case was far more makeable. But now, today, with public sector unions and the people who really do fund the Democratic Party, I just read this piece this morning. I brought it to work with me. Wall Street, big banks spending $74 million trying to get Joe Biden elected. Now, do you think Wall Street donors from the nation's biggest banks end up spending $74 million this last month to get Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden elected? Let me get the question out. If this is a true Democrat back in the times that you're talking about, and by the way, the Democratic Party was really in the South, you couldn't make the case that they were pro-union or they were pro-civil rights because they were not none of those things. I mean, the South was the place where you would go if you didn't want to have to deal with the union.
Well, they're the ones that say if you're a proud loner, you'll make it. And United You Stand is some kind of a commie plot.
Not really. That's
so
not true.
So they say divided you stand, united you fall.
Who breaks when the unions get broken in the South? Who breaks
well,
them?
That's what the Confederacy was.
No. They were Democrats. Come on.
Proud loners
would
make
the,
it.
The Civil War is
like
over.
Libertarians.
The Civil War is over. When they start breaking.
Well, libertarians are pulling the same crap.
Well, forget the libertarians.
I don't want to start pressing, but these guys.
Listen to my friend. We're talking about Democrats and Republicans, and you just changed horses on me.
If you got Steve Mnuchin, he's not a Republican. He's a criminal.
Secretary of Treasury. You obviously don't want to have the conversation. Take the last comment.
Well, Steve Mnuchin is our Secretary of Treasury. He is a criminal, and the big banks don't want to be managed by a criminal. Secretary of Treasury, they run the banks have to be beholden to the Treasury, and if organized crime runs the Treasury, the banks better start doing something smart. Otherwise, they're going to be even worse.
Thank you for your call. You served up five or six different topics, and every time you were confronted, you tried to change the horse. I thank you. 303-696-1971. The Democratic Party, in the time period that he's talking about, Woodrow Wilson's a Democrat. Woodrow Wilson segregates Washington, D.C., puts children back in the factories, initiates the income tax, brings in the national bank, and goes to war in a war we had no business being in, the First World War. The aftermath of that is the aftermath of that. But when D.C. was not a segregated city until Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson goes and sees Birth of a Nation, D.W. Griffith's about the Klan, and comes out and proclaims the film. That's Woodrow Wilson. And when the Palmer raids are taking place, it was Woodrow Wilson, and they were setting loose on people that had, and it's amazing, that reflect this guy's politics. I'm a geek about that. And who was Palmer's boy? Palmer's boy was this young man named J. Edgar Hoover, living with his mom, making his bones as a crime fighter. And they deported people. They threw them out of the country. Emma Goldman. They deport Emma Goldman. It was called the Red Ark, A-R-K. They put them all on the ships and get rid of them. And Reed's no great Shakes hero. But it's interesting to read that or listen to hear that perspective, because I love talk radio, and it's been quite a week. Changing horses in the middle of the stream doesn't work. You're buying a new home, and you want something bigger. You're ready for a new neighborhood. Mortgage rates continue to be historic lows, making ownership incredibly affordable, especially when you work with Colorado's own American Financing. I love these guys. They've been around for 20 years, born in Colorado. I've worked for them forever, and they continue to grow with the real estate market, so they know what it takes to get you into a home for less. From custom loan programs to down payment assistance, their mortgage consultants can do it all without ever charging upfront or hidden fees. You need a realtor? They connect you with some of the best realtors here in Colorado. Look, let them do this for you. 303-695-7000. 303-695-7000. 303-695-7000. Call them today and say, okay, I want to start saving a lot of money and drop the number and tighten up the time. And okay, we're going to work for you. 303-695-7000. They really can do it. They did it for me. Apply online, AmericanFinancing.net, NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate. All right, tomorrow's Halloween. And think this through after a lot of off-air conversations yesterday. Why doesn't Donald Trump come to Colorado to campaign? He knows these are a bunch of anti-Trump GOPs that are running this. They don't want him here. You know, you want to cheerlead, and I love cheerleaders, but I got to tell you something. Think it through. Why doesn't Donald Trump come and campaign in Colorado? Because of the state GOP. Now, you want to tell me that's great? Fine. I say it's wrong. I'll say burn it down, start again. I know it starts it up again, but look, you guys, let me have a second to read something here. Sent to me by, if I said the name, and I thought it made a lot of sense. Let me see if I can find it. All kinds of stuff gets sent to me. But I thought, man, this was something that really, really, really made sense about the state of Colorado and where we are right now. And where is it, Peter? Oh, you'll find it eventually. But it jumped off the page on me. Let me see if I can find it. Here's some. He said, this is great. Some food for thought. Listening to your arguments with Randy yesterday. To me, the Colorado Republican Party is currently like the Denver Broncos. They suck. Now, people continue to cheer for the Broncos, and it's like continuing to cheer for the Republicans. It ain't going to change a thing. You have to tear the Broncos team apart and rebuild it, same as we have to do with the Republican Party. I think that what you're trying to say and what people aren't getting it, because like Broncos, they just want to cheer for the Republicans and hope it all works out. Hoping ain't going to win any games or any elections. We have to rebuild. Hell, I'll join Randy and help him any way I can. But it's going to take dedicated rebuilding. The Broncos and the Colorado Republican parties currently suck. We're getting beat by a piss-poor Democratic Party that certainly ain't the Kansas City Chiefs. The Dems are more like the L.A. Chargers, who we play Sunday, and there's no way we should lose to them or John Hickenlooper. But we will, because we don't have the right players, right coaches, or right management. Back right after this.
This is the Peter Boyle Show.
6:48. 12 minutes before the hour on a Friday morning, October 30th. Stefan this afternoon, the day before Halloween, 65 the high, tomorrow 56. And are you really going to have anybody come to the door? I mean, we're talking to Julie Hayden about it, and we're talking to Billy about it and his family, and Tommy's not sure, and no one knows. It has drastically changed. It was one of those urban legends. You ever read, remember the razor blades and the apples? It turned out to be a total hoax. There was nothing ever to razor blades and apples, to all the different things that people did, and they wrecked Halloween. Halloween used to be so much fun, and we always had great times. We talked about it earlier. I always spent the night before Halloween in a haunted house and got to be where people came with us. And it was always a grand show. We haven't done one in a few years, but they were great. 65 the high. Tomorrow night, what do you got planned? What are the kids going to do? What are the grandkids going to do? But like I said, as a kid, I always saw Halloween as the gateway. Man, if you had Halloween, whew, you were on a downhill slide to Thanksgiving. She was on a downhill slide, and I was just sliding in. Then you had, as soon as Thanksgiving was over, and then, although not as it's done today, because I think there's probably radio stations playing Christmas music already, but you will not November 1st, Billy says. Okay, so it kicks off in 2 days. We'll start to get... We have 14 radio stations.
Yeah, my other job, we got 14 stations kicking it off on November 1st.
November 1.
Yeah, November 1 is the first day that normally you can do the Christmas thing without people going crazy.
It used to be locally here in town, KOSI.
Yeah.
And it was a brilliant move, great programming move, and they would start to play Christmas music on Thanksgiving. And then, I forget, was it Cool that jumped and started playing it a week before then?
They tried, and there was a battle here in town, but eventually Cool gave up because the audience research found out that even if they were listening to Cool, people thought they were listening to Cozy.
Yeah, there it is.
So it didn't matter.
Yeah,
it literally did not matter. And so you're kind of like, well, all you were doing is using your radio station to pump up the image of a competitor. Yeah, it's like, probably not a good idea.
Maybe, that's right.
Yeah, you know, if you have your own burger joint and everybody comes in and goes, this is a great McDonald's, you're like, maybe I'm not doing this right.
So now, and you say of the ones you program or help program, 14 of them are kicking off Christmas or holiday music.
Yep. In fact, we've got one that's an affiliate in Boston. And I got the owner, great job. He has bought, he doesn't have a ton of money, but he has bought a billboard on the major highway that goes in and out of Boston. And between now and December 24th, more than 4 million people are going to drive by that thing.
Wow.
So it's going to be nice. And he's done it. And again, we talked about him and the graphic design was really nice. He put the call letters, not the callers, but the frequency right in the middle, a little bit of call letters, you know, on the side. He's got to think about shopping local. You know, it's just he doesn't have, you know, his own face on there. You know, he doesn't have, oh, we're the Christmas cat. Yeah. Bah, meow. Yeah. You know, they'd have some stupid animal on there. Yeah. It's just it's really well done, really clean. But yeah, we got 14 there going and they wanted to go. This is more than we've had normally because it's 2020 and people want to get to, you know, the idea of the holidays and Christmas and spending time with family. And it might be the last thing.
Did you?
Close to normal.
Did you see the British story that they're going to raid people's homes on Christmas to see if you have too many people in your house?
Yeah. That's a very British thing, yes. It's like, what the hell?
Who gets to make that call?
Yeah.
So, anyhow.
And don't you want to pull that duty? Great.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go around on Christmas and make you break up other people's parties.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Daddy.
That's fantastic. How about job security and happiness about that job?
Daddy, why is Santa putting chains on mommy?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Ooh, ouch. Anyhow, so you don't expect much door-to-door action tomorrow night.
No, and we are in a neighborhood full of children. Again, you know, we have an elementary school four blocks away, so we are packed with kids in the neighborhood. And no, we're not going to see much.
With my grandson, Gaylord Street has always just been wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Take your kids
fantastic.
To Gaylord Street and then go around, knock on doors and get some candy. But I think it's the dressing up and the anticipation.
Oh, yeah.
I loved it.
It's the pretend.
Oh,
it's the idea that you get to be your hero.
Who were you? When you were...
Oh, God, how many people wasn't I? I mean, I have a lot of really funny costumes and stories. Mm. One of the things is, okay, if we haven't noticed, I'm a little weird. And so the things that I like to choose and the costumes I wanted to be as a kid, they didn't really have them at the time. When Star Wars first hit, I'm a kid, I wanted to be Chewbacca. There's no damn Chewbacca costume. Nobody wants Chewbacca. Everyone wants to be Han and Leia and Luke and Darth Vader. No Chewbacca. So... My parents went out and we got, oh gosh, they found a wig. They found Wolfman hands that were rubber that had hair on them. They found, you know, spirit wax and hair gums that put hair on my face. And they, you know, browned up my face and gave me a little black nose. Yeah. And then I had a brown sweater that I turned inside out, brown corduroy pants. And then, God love my dad, I had these weird... They were almost like snowshoes as a kid, but they were big red plastic shoes, and they looked like Bigfoot's feet. So you were supposed to run around in the shoes and like, look, they're Bigfoot footprints. I'm a funny kid. My dad wrapped them in butcher's paper and painted the top of them so it looked like they were Bigfoot's feet. Now, granted, the paper, after I walk around for about a block and a half, all ripped off, and so I'm, you know, Chewbacca with giant red feet, but that's okay. I still remember that. And the other story I have is when I wanted to be Superman, no Superman costumes either except for the stupid plastic one, and then it just had had like the picture of Superman on the front of the costume. Okay. That's not Superman. Superman has to wear the costume because I'm a little jerk. And I'm like, no, Mom, I'm not wearing a little plastic thing that just has Superman's picture on the front. That's not how Superman dresses.
That's right.
So she's like, okay, you little rat. She went around and actually had gone to a bunch of different stores. And eventually, because remember, Superman has tight little red underwear that he wears over his blue pants.
Yeah.
She spent about a month wandering around from men's clothing store to clothing store asking if they had small red underwear. Yes, imagine the looks they got at the time. You know, we're talking the 80s. You're talking early 80s. Like, sorry, ma'am, you want what? This may have been late 70s, actually. I'm thinking about it now, probably around 79. So she's walking to the store. I was going, hi, do you have red underwear that'll fit children? That's, yeah, sure, lady. What are you doing here? Yes. Please leave. Can we escort her out of the building? She found them, and yeah, I love her for that.
Superman.
It was a homemade costume. Yeah. They even went to the hobby store and got a little S, you know, like you would sew on a Letterman's jacket, and she found the one that looked somewhat similar to Superman's S and sewed that on the front of my, on the front, and it was a hand-sewn yellow S on a red piece of cloth that she did for me as a Superman cape.
That's a nice mom.
Yeah,
it's a good mom.
I still remember the time in which it was middle of the summer and I was being a little jerk and I wanted to be Spider-Man and I had to have a costume. And she's like, we're not buying a costume. So she literally took a pair of my old pajama pants, cut them off, sewed them into a mask, and with a Sharpie, she and my dad drew Spider-Man on the front on the front of the thing. And yeah, I'm sure it looked like some sort of freak show, but in my mind, I was Spider-Man.
Well,
yeah.
No, of course. I mean, that's really where it is.
Yeah, I'm jumping on the swing set out back and shooting webs at the neighbors, and they're like, and of course the neighbors are like, well, the Thorpe kid's got the pajamas on his head again. This is great. Yeah. Can we call somebody about this?
Make the call.
Yeah, but exactly.
I always, you know, everybody got into the big thing about blackface, and when we were little guys and it's Halloween, it wasn't costume money or creativity, I think, but my mom would burn a cork. Well, I've told the story thousands of times, and the stove that my folks had, you had to get, they called them kitchen matches, and you struck and then you turned the gas on and the stove would come on. And my mom would take where would they get that cork? Gee, I don't know. But then line your face. And
you're a hobo.
You're a hobo. Yeah. We come bums. You're a bum. And, you know, an old hat. And you're off to get candy. And today, I guess that would be politically incorrect. And what's that great line? As God is my judge, I never thought I was going as a black man or.
Yeah.
I thought I was going as a bum. And you could bum out pretty quick. I mean, I don't think we did many costume changes, but
yes.
You know, and go to the neighbors and, you know, and have an old hat on and you're a bum. But the idea was the candy. Wow. And make all these, you know, long, you got on a safari thing, you know, start going further and further into the neighborhoods. And then there was always the Shangri-La that there were, according to legend, where the Hershey's lived or the melons or something. And they gave out silver dollars. I actually wrote about it. And it really was. It was Shangri-La. It was El Dorado.
Oh, ours was the full candy bars. You find those houses, you got the full candy bars.
Yeah, well,
and we knew who they were.
Everybody had full candy bars.
We knew who they were.
Back when thousands of years ago, there was no little candy bars. They were big candy bars. But there was always these legends that where the melons lived or where the Hershey family lived or some really wealthy people lived, which would have been thousands of miles from where we lived. But if you could get on that street, my uncle would tell those stories, that you got silver dollars. You went from house to house, and they would give you a silver dollar. Whether or not that was true, but it was. It was Shangri-La. It was El Dorado. We turn around and come back with Denver City Councilman Dave Gruber for a quick update. Dr. Tom Noel's on the show. It is the day before Halloween.